You're listening to the Dibbly Dobbly Podcast. Remember to like, share, comment, subscribe, and click the bell to make sure you get the latest episodes of the podcast. Be sure to like and share our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter and on Instagram.
Okay, so I'm Lee Malloy, current head of cricket operations at Jersey Cricket. I've been involved in Jersey Cricket for a long time now and in multiple roles. And now I'm on the Dibbly Dobbly Podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Dibbly Dobbly Podcast. And on the podcast, we have started a new series on the podcast, looking at associate nations within cricket and how they are developing the game in their country. Many of us cricket fans know so much about the established cricketing countries and not enough on the associate nations who play cricket. So it would be nice to learn more about those associate countries, and via the podcast, people can learn more as well. For today's Associate Cricket Series episode, we are discussing all things Jersey cricket. Joining me to discuss and talk all things Jersey cricket is the head of cricket operations at Jersey Cricket, Lee Malloy. Lee, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
That's great to have you, Lee. And it's great to have you on for a chat about all things Jersey cricket, a small Channel Island in between England and France that plays cricket. And a lot of people know that Jersey have been involved in cricket for many years, but probably for our newer viewers to the sport and new people who are entering cricket, they might not make that association between Jersey and cricket, between the two. But this Associate Cricket Series, what we're doing on the podcast, is trying to educate people and to make them understand more about these associate countries and what they do and the people behind the scenes. And what they do in terms of promoting the sport in their country and trying to make a difference in the community, which a lot of people do. And fantastic what a lot of people have been doing. So I think, Lee, in this episode today, speaking to you, I think a lot of people will learn more about Jersey cricket and learning about the good work you're doing and the team in terms of improving, getting better as a cricketing nation and trying to be recognized and noticed, really, and trying to achieve big things and grow the sport in Jersey. So it's definitely going to be a learning curve for a lot of people listening to this episode today, which is a part of cricket, I suppose. You always learn something new in cricket and you don't stop learning. So it's definitely going to be a learning, definitely for me, it's going to be a learning opportunity for me today, just to understand a bit more about cricket in Jersey. But before we do that, Lee, as I do with all my guests that I've interviewed on the podcast, I like to take them back to when they first got into cricket. And it's been very fascinating listening to people's memories on how they started to get into cricket. So, Lee, let's go back to the very beginning growing up. What were your earliest memories of watching, playing, and even going to the cricket? And who were some of your cricketing idols that you looked up to growing up?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, for me, growing up, the main focus to start with was football. I was a big football, big Liverpool fan, still am. So that was a massive part of my childhood, and cricket was in the family, as it tends to be with a lot of people who've ended up playing. My granddad actually captained Jersey back in the 1960s, I want to say, a fair while ago now. And that's how it first started. Some of the memories I've got would be way back in the late 90s, with the World Cup in England in 1999, followed by the 2003 World Cup. I think that was the one that really sort of got me hooked into the game. Certainly as a young aspiring batter, watching the likes of Tendulkar and Ponting go about their business. You won't be able to see in the podcast, but I'm not the tallest person on two legs. So for me, watching the people of the same stature of sort of Ponting and Tendulkar come in and smash people all over the park and have great success was quite inspiring for me as a someone who's a bit more vertically challenged. So that was certainly one of my earliest memories. And then obviously the 2005 Ashes was the first time I really saw England have some success. So that sort of then got me and a whole generation of people completely hooked and enjoyed turning up and playing and representing Jersey all across the junior levels, right the way through to under 19 level. So yeah, the early memories were what you saw on TV, as most people will attest to, and certainly individual players, as I said, the likes of Ponting was one that probably as an Englishman you wouldn't admit too often, but the way he went about his cricket, he was you know, one of those who made the game look easy, but was always taking the game to the opposition and had a bit of a competitive streak in him, which I quite liked coming from other sports like football and others. So, yeah, that was certainly one of my main first interests in cricket.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Couldn't agree more. Well, Lee, you know, some of the world's best batters were short, like Tendulkar, like Bradman. So they had great success, didn't they? You don't have to be the tallest batter to have success.
Maybe a little bit different this day and age, yes, with the boundaries and the power hitting and being 6 foot six and built like Andre Russell tends to help a little bit, I think.
Yeah, definitely. The game's changed, definitely, that's for sure, over the years. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. 2003 World Cup was pretty memorable World Cup if you're an Australian supporter. Not so much if you're an England supporter during that World Cup, because they had a bit of a shocking tournament in 2003. And then obviously the 2005 Ashes, as you mentioned, probably one of the greatest Ashes series that ever was played, really.
I think there's a whole generation of cricketers that have would probably say that that's one of their fondest memories growing up watching cricket. The spectacle on both sides, even though you guys came out on the wrong side of it that time. I think both teams come the end of it, and the way that it had ebbed and flowed was just incredible. And, you know, there's so many individual moments within a series that you wouldn't even necessarily go to straight away. You've obviously got Peterson's 100 at the Oval. You've got the run out of Ponting by Gary Pratt. You've got so many stories within a story. You know, it just became something that was incredible to watch, and incredible to watch day to day, that made everything just change in a session. You know, you knew when Warne came on to bowl that would change the game at some point, when Flintoff all of a sudden went off at Edgbaston and tore everyone apart, taking Brett Lee down was, you know, inspiring to watch. So it was, you could go through every test match watching Peterson hit Glenn McGrath over his head for six. Didn't happen very often, but you know, even just sitting here now, there's probably 10 to 20 things that we could reel off that were just amazing, and I don't think it'll ever be replicated again.
No, definitely. And one that came to mind was Shane Warne getting rid of Andrew Strauss.
That ball was in the rough, he leaves alone, and all of a sudden he's taken out his leg stump, which was incredible to watch. I mean, it just was a ridiculous series of cricket that no one quite knew what would happen day to day, let alone McGrath stepping on a cricket ball in a warm-up.
Yes,
you know, just ridiculous. Every day was something different.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was, yeah, arguably one of the best series that were ever played between Australia and England throughout the history of the Ashes. Ebbed and flowed, as you said, and it got a lot of people into cricket, especially from both sides of the world, Australia and England, young kids growing up in that generation. Just to see what cricket was all about and what test cricket was all about, really, because that's the pinnacle of the sport, isn't it? And we saw that on full display in that series, which was clear to see during that series. Your memories of playing cricket as a kid, Lee, what stands out for you the most when you look back and you remember those times growing up as a kid? What's the one memory that stands in your mind from a cricketing perspective when you were playing the game yourself?
Yeah, I think it was the way that it was I think off the field, a mental battle day to day. I think that was the one thing that stood out for me. It was a team game, but an individual sport. You know, the highs and lows of scoring runs, but losing the game, of, you know, winning games, but having failed yourself. I think it was just a constant up and down and learning how to deal with those setbacks, but also the highs. And I think, you know, it's that sport that you don't get a lot of highs, that, you know, a lot of the time, especially if you're a batter and you don't bowl, you don't get many opportunities to take part. You know, that when you do, it makes it even more sweeter when you end up scoring those runs. So I think my biggest memory growing up with cricket was just that constant, you know, need to keep focused on what's in front of you and enjoy the highs and not let the lows get too low. And looking back on it now, there were certain times when I wish I'd had that advice back then, but you know, the way that the game was built, and the way that there was a you know, individual tactical battles within a game, that was just the part of the sport that I really loved. And winning as a team was even sweeter if you performed, but ultimately it was about getting over the line in any way possible, and it was just, you know, one of those sports that you can get the same sort of feeling anywhere else. In football, you can score an own goal and go down the other end and make up for it and score two. Whereas if you nick off first ball and you don't bowl, well, good luck standing in the field thinking about it for the next 50 overs. So, yeah, I think it was the mental challenges and the ups and downs and the enjoyment of the game that really stands out for me.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, yeah. I think everyone can relate to that, really. You know, it's all about having fun, isn't it? We take this game seriously sometimes. We forget that, lose sight of that, and just play to have fun. That's what you do. I think Joe Root said that. I think someone said, you know, why do you play cricket? He said, have fun, like I did when I was a kid, growing up.
Yeah. And I think same Joe Root having fun. That's what you see within the England camp at the moment, especially in the test side. I think that's what McCollum's done so well. He's come in and knows he's got some of the best players in the world in the dressing room, and it's just giving them the freedom to go out and express that and get back to their roots of why they really got into the game. It's different. It's risky because obviously the English media tend to be pretty brutal when it comes to reporting sport, and would have been very easy if they'd lost games of cricket. But clearly he's got something right there because they're doing so well. And as we say, it's probably speaks to just giving them the freedom and the mentality to go out and perform. And we've heard all the interviews and read all the articles if you're into cricket enough. And that's what was good about the Ashes this year. And you saw, you know, that even the first ball getting hit through the covers before was exactly the moment that it was building up to, that England were right in that, and it's freed them up. So it certainly shows that can be a massive advantage if you use well at the highest level.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, at any level, really. It's all about just, you know, playing with your mates, having fun and enjoying a game that you enjoy. That's why people play sport, or any particular sport, not just cricket, but any other sport as well. Just to have fun. And
agreed.
Yeah, you know, we take it seriously sometimes. You know, if you're a supporter or a player, you know, it's just a game at the end of the day. It's not going to change anything. It's just a game. Oh yeah, I got out for a golden duck. That's just a game. It's not going to change me. I'm still the same person.
Exactly. Yeah, we speak a lot in coaching about not attaching who you are to your cricket performances. You know, at the end of the day, when you leave the cricket field, you're still the same person as when you turn up in the morning. It's just whether you're going to carry it home with you and deal with it, you know, 24/7, or whether you can sort of shut it off and just put it to one side and move on. But that is a massive part of the game, and certainly without the right support can have a massive negative effect on individuals and can get lost within the game and forget, you know, their roots and why they're really there. So, you know, the coach's responsibility and other administrators within the game, it's important that they understand that the reason why that they're doing things. And yeah, nobody has to be happy when you lose or be happy if you fail. But at the same time, you know, you can't carry that with you. Otherwise, the rest of your life is just going to feel difficult. So, yeah, it's important that you sort of don't forget why you started playing the game in the first place. And 9 times out of 10, it's because you want to go and enjoy it.
Yeah, that's right. I couldn't agree more. Absolutely. And so it's very important that we all realize that message. It's a game. It's to be enjoyed and just have fun, really. Express yourself and play this great game that we all love with your mates and your friends. So in terms of getting involved with Jersey cricket, tell us about that, getting involved behind the scenes with Jersey cricket as a whole. You've had various roles. You're currently the cricket operations. You're the head of that at the moment. You were the former women's head coach and the former men's assistant coach and the former performance and development manager, which are pretty, you know, very high roles and honours there, Lee. Which have great responsibility attached to them. So just tell us how you were a part of the setup and how that connection between you and Jersey cricket happened, really.
Yeah, well, I mean, those from Associate Nations sitting here listening to it will probably recognise that when you're in a small nation like ourselves, you've got a small staff, so people have to wear various hats across the pathway and across the actual governing body itself. So it's not unusual for people across Associate Nations to have held various roles to do whatever they can at the right time to help their nation. How I got into it myself was having had a failed playing career at certainly at the men's level, as I was in and around the training squad, but never really getting into any tournament squads, the conversation came that I was interested as a community coach and a development coach. Would I be interested in taking the performance side of things a little bit more seriously, and sort of think about maybe stepping back from playing and pursuing the coaching side of things? And you know, as I said, I was probably, you know, in the middle of a cricket career that wasn't really going too far at the Jersey top level. So coaching seemed like the natural step. So having been to university and gained a degree in sports coaching and development, along with the experience I had from a young age coaching on community programs and working at the grassroots level, wanted to go that way, which you know, set me on a path towards a level three coaching award and working overseas within Ireland and various places. That meant that my coaching career within Jersey would take off a little bit and work with various coaches and push into that. So over the last, what's it been, nearly 12 years now, from grassroots right the way through to the top level game over here, I've had a hand in the pathway at all levels, working with, you know, junior players at club level, at international level, and with the men's side. It's been a journey so far, and it's been one that I've enjoyed thoroughly. It's taken me around the world as the men's assistant coach. We've played tournaments, Johannesburg, Los Angeles was a particular one that stands out. Singapore, Malaysia, you know, I could keep going on, Abu Dhabi, Dubai. You know, it's been a real enjoyable journey as a coach, and I've learned a lot along the way. It was an amazing time to be a part of that setup under the tutelage of Neil McRae, who's just left us, who had an extremely successful period. The team obviously included in that as well. We went through a few different teams across that time of people coming in and out. So to have been involved in that for as long as I was special, and memories that I'll never forget. But moving on now into the more administration side of things, really, where that sort of role has come into its own. I've got a young family, so working less on weekends and evenings has been a real bonus for myself and my partner. So she's delighted with that, that's for sure. So I mean, over time things change and you got to change with them, and we're now in an exciting period for Jersey cricket where the coaching staff looks very different to what it was even just 6 months ago. So it'd be interesting to see where it goes. And for myself, that growth has been fantastic, and the women's head coach role within that 3 years or 4 years was challenging with it starting in the middle of COVID. Those were obviously challenging years, and that was new challenges that I hadn't come across before as a coach. But the growth that we've seen there, which I'm sure we'll talk about more as the podcast goes on, the project that I started there and the work that went in behind the scenes from the players, the assistant coaches, the administration staff was superb. And there's a real impetus been put in place there, and that's just about to take off, and there'll be more that we'll talk about, as I said. But that was a very exciting time as a coach to be involved in that, and I'm delighted with the job that the girls and the efforts that were made to grow that. So yeah, it's been a long journey to get just here, but exciting future ahead as well.
Definitely. And I think what people don't realize, Lee, is, as you touched on there, is that these associate countries are under-resourced and under, you know, don't have the personnel, so to speak, like the full member countries. So it's very important to, you know, put your hand up and say, yeah, I'll do that and take that responsibility on to try and, you know, make a difference, I suppose. And you feel good and you're giving something back. And I think that's very important. I always say, Lee, one of the sayings I always say is that the game doesn't owe us anything, but we owe the game a lot. Mm-hmm. And that's true. We do. Because sometimes we can take it for granted and, you know, give something back, like volunteer at your local club or something, you know, do a role there within your club, like be the president or be the curator of the grounds or make the tees or whatever that so many people do, or take up scoring or umpiring and give back. So I think that's vitally important within cricket across all levels, but also associate nations as well, because as you said, you've got to wear many hats as you've done in your time. But you must feel a sense of pride and, a sense of pride, I think, looking back and saying, yeah, I'm pretty happy that I did all that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's something that I never took for granted. I think there's a lot of coaches out there who would be extremely, jealous of the opportunities that were provided to me just by having been involved with this particular country. I think the players have a similar mindset in the standard of cricket that they've been able to play and the trips that they've been able to be on and being able to play cricket around the world. There are a lot of county second 11 cricketers that have been round the circuit and not had anywhere near the opportunity that some of our guys have had. And I think the growth that Jersey cricket's seen over that time and having been a big part of that is extremely fills me with pride and something that I plan to hopefully be involved with for a long time with a new role at the moment. But it's all taking off, and with each year we continue to grow, and the mentality we have here is one in, all in, everybody, whether that's the 11 men or women taking the field to represent their island, whether that's the people in the office doing their work, whether it's the guys on the ground here at our home ground, Grainville, it never stops. So it's an exciting time. And when I started just after university, there was a full-time staff of three. We're now a full-time staff of six, and a board with a full membership in place, and a home ground with home offices. And that just speaks volumes of the growth of the game and where we've got to as a cricketing nation within the associate pathway.
Definitely, couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more with that, Lee. And I think everyone will agree with that as well. And you should be proud, because Jersey have achieved a lot of great things over the years, as we'll talk about as we get into this podcast deeper and deeper in our chat, that you should be proud of, and the team as well. And it's very important that, even off the field, you have that team mentality as well. It's not about individuals and their personal milestones or whatever. It's all about the team, and you should always have that in cricket or in any sport. Is that team first attitude. It's always about the team, put the team first and try and do what you need to do to improve the team and make the team successful. And you've certainly done that, as well as other people as well, and the players. So definitely should be proud of that. And also thank you, Lee, for sharing your journey into the game, how you got into it, your memories. And I always find that fascinating when I listen to people speak of those early memories into the game, because everyone's different. Everyone has a different path into the game and a different introduction. So thank you for sharing that with us, Lee. Much appreciated. Lee, I thought to start this interview on Jersey cricket, let's talk about the history of cricket in Jersey. And you can learn a lot about cricket from its history. And the history of cricket in Jersey is quite interesting. So Lee, give us a brief overview on the history of cricket in Jersey.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's been played for a very long time now. Cricket has been a mainstay within the Jersey sporting calendar. Previously, as far as I can remember back, the focus was playing amongst sort of ECB cricket. So we were affiliated to ECB, and we would play touring sides coming over here, and Jersey would always have the big game against our big rivals, Guernsey, from across the pond. That was always one of the biggest parts of the sporting calendar, with hundreds of people coming to watch the game. And to this day, still is a massive part of both Ireland's calendar, both taking that journey into ICC cricket. Speaking from what I can remember, we made that transition into ICC Associate Nation in around 2008, 2007, hosting, some fantastic teams in that first Challenge League, World League 5, which included the likes of Afghanistan, who are obviously very familiar with a lot of listeners. So they were there, and they sort of rose up those rankings that as the years have gone, and a good documentary there about their rise, which includes Jersey. So we've been around for a long time, as I say, since 2007 to 2008 now, with the men's side really going into ICC cricket and with many promotions and relegations along the way, we played a lot of cricket over the last 10 to 15 years. Those rivalries between Jersey and Guernsey have continued for a long time, and that's still what's spoken a lot about in the bar after games of local cricket. Success stories and individuals, some good, some bad, as you can imagine. Brings back a lot of memories, and people who remember cricket in Jersey, if you performed well in those interinsular games, then that sort of etched you in history forever. But as with everything, times are changing across both islands, with, you know, big results coming abroad and traveling the world and things like that. So the landscape of cricket in Jersey has changed a lot. And from what I can remember, the history that we've got, we generally like to think we punch above our weight across the ICC pathway, with an island of just over 100,000 now, and a playing pool that is limited to just that, with obviously certain restrictions in place about representing nations that hinder us over other nations' passports, as one example. The DNA that we have within our nation is to produce our own and be very proud of that. And what's now a new part of our history is having people going out there and chasing cricket careers. We've had it over the last 5 to 6 years where we've had players come through and represent county second 11s, play first class cricket for MCCU sides. And only in the last 12 months, we've just seen our first player signed to a county on a multiple year contract, in Asa Tribe at Glamorgan. So he's leading the way there, and hopefully, you know, that leads the way for a lot of other youngsters to see that it's actually attainable if you have been in Jersey and stayed in Jersey, and it is possible. So a brief history there for you. From what I can remember, there'd be a lot of people who would remember a lot further back than me, but that transition from the ECB to the ICC was a huge turning point in our history, and really sparked something within our younger generations that was a big carrot to dangle in front of young cricketers to say, if you put the time and effort in, the rewards are there, to go and represent the men's side on an international stage, travel the world with people that you know well from home, and really go and come back to that enjoyment level of cricket where, you know, you really get to take part in opportunities that not a lot of people would have been able to be a part of. So that was a huge part of our history, and a big moment in time that my mentor and a lot of people's mentor in Chris Minty, who led the way in developing pathways and development systems in Jersey for the junior players. He made that decision along with others to go that route, and it's paid huge dividends for thousands of junior cricketers in Jersey.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. And thank you, Lee, for sharing that with us about the brief history of cricket in Jersey there. I'm sure people will learn lots from just listening to you speak about that, from listening to this episode of the podcast, or want to do their own research and that into it. And researching myself on the history of cricket in Jersey, it's quite interesting. Way back, it stems many years, and it's quite a fascinating read. And I would encourage people to take the time to do some research and learn more about it, because, you know, yeah, Jersey's had quite an interesting history, as you've just touched on there, but also going way, way back to the early years of the game as well. So it's quite interesting. But thank you, Lee, for sharing that with us, a brief history lesson on the history of cricket in Jersey. So thank you for sharing that with us. Lee, let's talk about the Jersey national teams, the women's and men's teams. Be good to gain your insights on the two teams and learn more about their achievements, the player stories, because many of the players come from diverse backgrounds. And obviously, you were the head coach of the women's side and the assistant coach for the men's side. So you can give us perfect insights into both teams and the players and their stories. So Lee, for those who may not know a lot about the Jersey women's and men's teams, can you tell us more about them, the players, and some of their stories?
Yeah, of course. So from the women's side of things, that's obviously a lot newer, a lot fresher than the men's side of things. It's a clear focus point for us, and that was made clear by the ICC that that's a huge directive across the world, that the women's game needs to grow and be given the platform that it deserves. The girls who are involved in the women's side at the moment are very focused on replicating or making history, just like the men have done. One of the first chats we had when I came in as head coach was to sort of look at just how, you know, what they can do and put their stamp on it and really sort of start something that then they can be very proud of in the future and put something in place that, you know, when they finish their playing careers, that they can pass on to a next generation that then leaves it in a better place. They're continuing to do that over the last 3 to 4 years. We've established a sort of performance mentality within that squad that doesn't necessarily just focus on participation within the national team. They would train 2 to 3 times a week, which would include S&C elements of it as well. So keeping their fitness and nutrition up was an important part of it, giving them the opportunity to explore cricket outside of Jersey was a massive part, learning the game. One thing that's abundantly obvious within the women's game is just the lack of opportunity that they've had at junior level to, you know, a cricketer of a similar age on the boys' side of things would have maybe played 100 plus games of cricket by the age of 18. For a lot of girls, that would be a lot less than that, which is, you know, unfair. It also has a massive impact on their development. They're learning the game at an older age with not a lot of resource behind them. So getting them games of cricket and getting them playing as much as possible is a huge, huge part of what we need to do in the short term. But they've had some great success. When I first took over, it was about a year and a half till we actually won a game of cricket. There was a mixture of putting them in a tougher environment to get them to learn, because you learn a lot from that, but also just a level of performance that wasn't there yet because they hadn't trained to that level. So as things went on, we started to see success. Big wins in Interinsulas against Guernsey, where previously we'd have lost, was a big turning point. Going away and playing fixtures off island in France and places like that against other nations was a big turning point for them, when they started to see their efforts and their time and commitment come to fruition with performances, individual and as a team. The level of their skills have improved no end. They work so hard. I think that's what was my favourite part, looking back on my time as the head coach, was just watching them grow as cricketers, but also the amount of time and effort that it put into improving as players and just how much they're willing to sacrifice to do that. They're very, very proud to represent their island. We hosted a women's European Division 2 tournament, which was the first one ever, in May last year. It didn't go the way performances-wise that we would have liked. We won some games. We lost some games we should have won. That ended up meaning we finished in third place with the best net run rate in the tournament. And when we were good, we were really good. So they showed glimpses in their first tournament in high pressure situations that they'd never come across before. The Bank Holiday Monday against Italy here, I think we had close to 300, 400 people watching. They'd probably played in front of 10 to 12 before, max. So for them, it was a lot of new experiences, and it will stand them in good stead moving forward, because associate cricket playing in tournaments is like no other cricket, I'd say. It's cutthroat. It's 5-6 games of cricket max. Winners go up, losers go down, threat of funding losses, opportunities taken away if you don't succeed. It's high pressure, highly competitive situations that for your first effort, they did really, really well and coped with it really, really well. We'd have obviously all liked to have been promoted. The girls and myself and the backroom staff were absolutely gutted that didn't happen. But certainly it was a really, really overall positive experience that will allow them to improve moving forward with many years to come. The average age of the squad is around 18, maybe 19 now. It was, you know, a lot younger than that now when we first started in 2020. So there's only room for growth there. We went to the Netherlands last year and competed and won a game against Netherlands A side, who are a lot more advanced in their women's cricket than we are. So the good signs, the positive signs are there. And for them, there's going to be many years of success. The captain, Chloe Grecian, was the leading wicket taker in that tournament. She's a superb cricketer, left arm spinner, who doesn't go for any runs and takes buckets of wickets. She's got a big future ahead of her if she wants it in the game. She was over with Sunrisers cricket last year. She actually played her first game of 50 over cricket for the Sunrisers development side, bowled 10 overs on the trot, 2 for 20, against Southeast Stars. So, you know, for someone who's never played that format of cricket before, she was just excited to be able to bowl 10 overs. Usually, obviously, T20, you can only get 4. So, you know, I went over with her and supported her on that. And she was superb, and they're keen on having her back. And yeah, I could name multiple. Two of the girls against Germany put on a record partnership. Grace with the highest score as a number 8 batter in women's T20I cricket, which is a world record at the moment. They put on over 100. We were 20 for 6, I think it was. And then they put on over 100, her and Annalise Merritt together. And for those who were there on that day, it wasn't just building a partnership and knocking it round. And it was, we're going out there and we're taking the game to the opposition with no fear cricket, which is what we discussed and what you can often get from youngsters. So that was a huge moment for the girls to sit and watch them take down an experienced German attack. So that was fantastic. So yeah, from the women's side of things, the game is just about taking off, and it's just such in its infancy that moving forward, there's only an excited feeling to see where they can go and where they can grow towards. And from the men's side of things, they've got the blueprint, you know, in place. We've just lost Neil McRae, a very successful coach for us over 10 years, winning, I think, something like 5 or 7 ICC titles that I was part of, a few of those as the backroom staff. He came in and just transformed what we were doing. We already had a very successful pathway, but he turned that into just a machine of churning out superb junior cricketers who loved playing for Jersey. He created an unbelievable feeling to be part of within that side and that squad whenever we travel. It's something that's part of our DNA as Jersey cricketers. As a small island, we're very proud to represent that nation, and we stick together when we do that. There's a very close-knit bunch of cricketers there on both the men's and women's side, and we're all friends and everybody gets on off the field. We would pre-game every night, we would have dinner together and breakfast together, and that was, you know, not the same across all countries. Some people do it very differently, and that's not to say that that's the right or wrong, but for us, that's the way we do it. You're expected to buy into that mentality and that culture that we've set within the men's and women's sides, where it's one in, all in, as I said. So yeah, from the men's side point of view as well, it's been a hell of a journey so far, with tournament wins, famous on Sky Sports, upsetting big nations, winnings against UAE, Oman, teams who have, you know, fully contracted players who play all year round, USA victories. You know, there's so many over the last 10 years certainly of Neil's reign that were extremely successful for Jersey. And I think that sort of culminated in the ODIs that we played for the first time as a nation just last year down in Namibia. And we had young Josh Lawrence and Anaïssa Tribe, who we spoke about before, scoring ODI hundreds for Jersey, which, you know, even just 5 years ago, using that term of a player scoring an ODI 100 seems so far away. We were, you know, a win that the boys will own up to against Canada that we should have got over the line there, would have made that tournament really interesting. And we were within touching distance of ODI status, which would have brought a completely new element to cricket in Jersey, with the funding that brings and the cycle of cricket that gives, like 35 games or something over 3 years rather than 15, would have been huge. But, you know, again, I think we're always very good at taking the positives from experiences because of the expectations that we've set. It was, so close. But we go again. We've got another Challenge League cycle starting. We've got a new coach in Paul Hutchison in place, who we're very excited about. You know, the men's side is just going from strength to strength. Jonty Jenner, who's been a very big part of that side for the last well, certainly eight years, has grown into a senior cricketer of that side, who's represented and played a high level of cricket. He's now flourishing. We've been very lucky to pick up Nick Greenwood, who was born in Jersey but moved to New Zealand at the age of two. Now plays for Wellington Firebirds, opening the batting for their Plunkett Shield team, who's just won that. We've got a lad, Ben Ward, who has played for Cape Cobras, who again was born in Jersey and then moved to South Africa at a young age, and has applied his cricket down there, and then is playing summers over in England and playing for us at the same time. So we've got some very good local homegrown cricketers. That is what our DNA and what we do. We make that very clear from the start, that we produce our own, and our focus and our development systems and the pathway that we have in place is all to do that. And when you've got a collective group of individuals, whether that's players, administrative staff, coaches, all on that same wavelength, everybody on the same page, understanding what our sole focus is. We're talking performance cricket, obviously, there. That's the main focus. Then everybody, that tends to breed some success. So yeah, in terms of high performance cricket and our men's and women's cricket, it's been an exciting journey for the men, which is going to continue. The women haven't even really got going on their journey yet. They're just getting started, and that's extremely exciting to see where that can go. So things are looking great on both sides of it. Neil's left the men's side in an extremely strong position. And Hutch is going to come in and take a team further, hopefully. And the new coach, who I can't name right now, for the women's side will be coming in and no doubt continue to improve that. And the girls, with their age and the experiences that they've had, can only really improve. So, it's nothing but excitement. And watch this space to see where we can get to next off an already very successful full 10 years of the men's side of things. And yeah, the women are looking to sort of take their own path within ICC cricket and continue to grow and succeed along the way.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Definitely. Yeah. You have to be optimistic and hopeful for the future. And
you do. And we've got lots of reasons to be optimistic. That's the thing. It's false optimism is one thing, but actually, you know, being involved in it and being very central to it, I can see what it all looks like. And if within it, everybody's motivated to take things forward and everybody's on the same page, and the players and the staff and everybody else around it, it's a very exciting time to be part of Jersey cricket, and will continue to be for a number of years, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely. And hopefully make it to major tournaments like 50 over World Cups or T20 World Cups. And in terms of the underage stuff, let's under 19s, let's just say, for those World Cups, are there any plans for the men's and women's teams to try and qualify for those under 19 events for both the women's and the men's under 19 World Cup?
Yeah. So the men's side of things, we've been involved in that a number of times now. We've had four or five under 19 World Cup qualifying tournaments where we've played and retained in ourselves in Division One, playing against the likes of Ireland, Scotland, Netherlands. We haven't managed to take that big step to a World Cup just yet, but that is very much the plan moving forward. We've established ourselves over the last three tournaments as the third best within Europe at that age group. Having beaten the Netherlands three times in a row at that tournament shows that our junior program is successful. They've obviously got a very successful program themselves, and the Netherlands in their own right are doing fantastic things within cricket. But they've been, you know, obviously superb and flying the associate flag in ODI cricket over the last few years, playing against the big nations and causing some great upsets. We often feel that if we can continue to give them good games and beat them at under 19 level, then taking that next step towards Scotland and Ireland is just around the corner. So we're very lucky in having Don Blompey as that head coach for them over the next couple of years of that cycle. He's a strong cricketer for Jersey who's put in performances over the years a number of times. So he's leading them. That's part of our pathway to have a men's cricketer who's been so successful and put performances in for Jersey men's side. Lead down under 19s is a big part of our pathway, because if you can see it, you can believe it. You know, it's a big part of that. So we're excited from that point of view. From the women's side of things, we haven't quite got the growth yet to meet the criteria for an under 19 World Cup effort. The criteria is a certain number of teams at junior levels needed. We're working on that. We have aims to do that in the future, no doubt. We need to continue growing the participation side of things and developing more sides amongst junior age groups. And we are focused on just doing that. So that's something to be looking at in the future. And certainly a realistic goal is for both of those sides at some point in the future to start pushing towards reaching a World Cup.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. In terms of rankings, where's the women's and men's teams currently ranked?
So from what I can remember, I believe the women are around 26 to 28 and the men are around 22 to 24 in that bracket. They change every few months. Haven't looked at them for a little while yet, especially when it's off season. So it's one of those where we're sort of one eye on it, because that's obviously quite a big part of our funding model and where we need to grow towards, and playing T20i series for ranking points. There's quite a tactical element to it about where you can gain points and who to play when. I think that's more applicable in the men's game at the moment. The women is very much about experiences and exposing them to good levels of cricket and improving them as a side. But yeah, the rankings are important. They obviously have a big impact on funding and other things moving forward. So the hope is to continue to climb in those. And I think ultimately that's just a product of good cricket on the field. So, you know, if you're focused on delivering, you know, on the field as an 11 and getting them playing the best cricket that you can, the ranking points and the climbing the rankings is just a byproduct of that. So the focus doesn't need to switch too much from just producing the best performances you can one game at a time on the field for Jersey, and be very proud to do that. And then the levels of funding and things like that will come with the successes as we go.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things in associate cricket, isn't it, Lee? Everyone doesn't get the ranking system. It's quite confusing from the ICC's point of view in terms of how it's calculated and how it's tallied up and all that.
Yeah. We've got a good grasp on it here. It's obviously an important part of your planning as a nation about organising series away from tournament cricket. Who to play when in certain situations makes sense. You know, for us right now, it's not the be all and end all necessarily, because we're not at that Challenge League playoff level where to get into that, you have to be a certain T20 ranking point for the 50 over qualification. That's not to say we're not keeping an eye on it and looking at how we can grow that figure and build the rankings and get up that ladder. So it's about having one eye on it, but also continuing to focus on what you do day to day within the operational side of things and what they deliver on the field. We're very focused on club cricket over the next few years. One of my main focuses within the operations role is to try and have a renewed club focus in Jersey, where we've maybe not been as focused and taken our eye off the ball a little bit over the last 5 to 6 years, with the focus being on the high performance cricket. So we need to get back to a strong position within our local leagues and continue to put a shining light on that and make sure that people within those leagues feel that they've got an opportunity within the men's setup and the women's setup and things like that. So yeah, there's a bigger picture to be looked at, and it's not all just here focused on high performance cricket. Big part of what we're talking about today is, but we've got a lot of responsibility across the whole of cricket in Jersey to focus on and make sure we get right.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. That's the important thing, isn't it? Trying to get it right at all levels, grassroots up to the international setup as well. So it's very important to make sure that's operating well. In terms of the culture, Lee, the team culture, because many associate nations have different players that come from different countries and different cultures and backgrounds, and they are integrating with the women's or men's teams. Is that the case in Jersey? Do you have players who come from different countries and backgrounds and origins?
So we're actually probably one of the ones who are actually different to that. And that doesn't mean it's, again, right or wrong. I think any good business or any good organization will look at what are our strengths, what's the best options for us. and really put a lot of time and resource into that. A lot of countries, as you say, do have various resources available to them, such as passport, family, different ways that they can go about getting players qualified to play for their nation. You know, that's sparked a lot of debate in years gone by. Our passports are effectively United Kingdom passports, so therefore it's not an option for us to just hand out passports. We don't have our own jersey passports that are recognised by ICC. So whilst that could be looked at as a negative or holding us back, we choose to look at it as a positive that gives us no option but to produce our own. So being a small island, we've got good access to players. If they're on island, they're only 10 minutes down the road, so they can get in and travel easily and not have too many restrictions on their training. And we have a culture built within Jersey that everybody enjoys playing for Jersey. So whilst we've picked up a couple of players over the years where they've qualified for 3 years, the likes of Nick Ferebee, Dean Morrison, Ryan Driver, those names have come into the island, not really just for cricket, but for other reasons with work, etc., and done 3 years to qualify for Jersey. It has happened in the past. It's not been our sole focus to recruit or bring people into Jersey for cricketing reasons. We have that culture set where we produce our own, as I keep saying, and that is very much our main focus for international level cricket, where we want people who want to be on the field for Jersey first and foremost, people who earn the right to take the field for Jersey, but also producing generations of cricketers who have grown up watching Jersey cricket on the sidelines and ultimately then take the field and produce for us. So yeah, we've got a lot of that happening, and we've got a lot of players off island now who are chasing careers, who are have left the island for various reasons, whether that's work or for cricket, and so we keep in touch with them regularly and work with them as much as we can. But it's both a blessing and a curse at the same time, if you want to look at it that way. But we really like to push what we can do on island and then see where it can take us from there. And it's been very successful for us recently, so why change now?
Yeah, that's right. The old saying is, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, exactly. Just keep making it better.
Yeah, that's right. And I suppose every country's in a different boat, really, when it comes to players and recruitment and all that stuff.
I mean, we're an island of 100,000, which is limiting, but they're also within a very small distance. You look at countries with millions of playing figures, but it's, 3 hours on a train just to get to a game of cricket, or, to get a national squad together to train as a squad makes things very difficult if they're not all close by. So, that's what a strength of ours is, getting everybody together quickly and everybody knowing each other very well off the field as well as on the field. Tends to sort of show in our cricket. The way that we go about it and the way that we do things on the field is a byproduct of what happens off the field. So what one person's negative is another person's positive, and vice versa.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more there. In terms of this year, 2024, what's in store for the women's and men's teams in terms of series against other countries and also potential qualifying tournaments?
Yeah, so the women don't have a tournament in place this year. It's a down year for their World Cup qualifiers and their cycle of their cricket. But that's not to say we're not organising anything. We've got a series planned against Germany and Italy in July, which will take place in Germany. So we'll be travelling down to Krefeld, I think, for that, which is exciting because they're two teams who are on the rise, with Germany beating us last year and us beating Italy. It should be a competitive series. We're also looking at a trip to Spain to get a game against their women's side with others around that. That's still in the works, so that's hopeful. We've got the games against Guernsey, which we have in the calendar every year, which are big games of cricket for both nations, and everybody's always keen to get those off the ground. We've had good news regarding our participation in the European Cricket Network women's series. That's going to be two divisions this year. We'll start in Division 2. With aims to push towards Division 1. So that's later this year, right at the end of the year in December. Another couple of things that we've got in the pipeline that aren't really over the line yet, but we're still finalising with the new coach coming in. So, they've got a big year with a lot of games. And then from the men's side, a little bit more structured with the recent announcement of the Challenge League groups, with us being in Group A, we should be finding out over the coming days where that first round is going to be later this year. We've been told it to be expected in Q4, but we don't know for sure. But we do have the first round of the European T20 qualifiers, which we're in one of the three groups in Germany in early July. And it'll be tough to get out of that group, that's for sure. So cricket across Europe is strengthening year to year. Big influx of players across multiple nations are really making it very competitive. And we've had a sort of a period of dominance of that, where we've been able to get regular wins and push to the global qualifiers, which don't exist anymore. We now have been joined by the likes of Scotland and Ireland, where we were in Edinburgh last year, which makes our job a bit more difficult because for various reasons, they're obviously a lot stronger than we are. But nothing that, you know, doesn't mean that we can't ever get a big upset. We like the idea of that. So that's just a bit more added motivation for us, really. So yeah, the men have got that in Germany in July, along with a series very shortly coming up on the 12th of April against Spain in Spain. So a bit of sun early season and some fixtures for them against an up and coming side in the Spanish setup. And then again, fixtures against Guernsey, trips away in Denmark in June, preparation for both. I'm sure there'll be something put in place once we've got the Challenge League dates set in stone. 50 over cricket, it's a very different format, as you're aware, to T20, so they'll need a preparation period for that, so there'll be more fixtures in line for that. So yeah, very busy season as always, which is great. We want to be busy, yeah, exciting times ahead.
Definitely, absolutely. Of course you want to be busy. Of course you want to be out there playing cricket. You don't want to be sitting on the sidelines doing nothing. So, yeah, fantastic to hear that there's lots of series and tournaments planned for both teams this year. So that's fantastic, Lee. And I think everyone would agree with me and say that we wish you all the best in terms of success and hope that Jersey cricket can continue on that upward trajectory and look to improve and continue to get better and look to challenge other associate nations and hopefully break into some tournaments in the near future and the years to come when it comes to World Cups and T20 World Cups potentially in the years to come. We'll be watching with close interest and waving the flag, so to speak, in terms of supporting the Jersey cricket teams, women's and men's. I'll be watching closely, that's for sure, and see how both teams get on. As you do in cricket, if you're a cricket tragic like me, Lee, you're watching all sorts of cricket from all parts of the world. So you know what's happening across the board, and there's so much cricket on, you lose track. Yeah, that's just the way it is, isn't it, with the international calendar as it is at the moment in world cricket. Yeah. But, you know, I do my best to try and have a look at all games that are happening, and no doubt I'll be watching Jersey closely and seeing what they can do in both the women's and the men's team. So we wish you all the best, Lee, and the team.
Thank you.
And the work behind the scenes, and hopefully you can achieve a lot of great things. But thank you for sharing your insights on both teams and how both teams are developing in the game of cricket and doing a fantastic job and are motivated. So there's definitely a good team culture and really good environment. Everyone's happy to be a part of the environment and the setup, and everyone's having fun, which we spoke about earlier about playing cricket to have fun, but also trying to be better and look to win and hopefully put your best foot forward. So definitely encouraging signs from what you've told me today, Lee. So we'll be watching with close interest, that's for sure, throughout this year, but also the years to come as well for Jersey cricket. So everyone take notice of Jersey cricket. They're going to be coming. Watch out. Hopefully they can shake up a few feathers in the associate world, and also maybe, you never know, maybe a World Cup in the near future or two. Yeah, definitely. So Lee, let's talk about the growth and development of cricket within Jersey in terms of getting cricket into local communities, clubs, schools and grassroots, etc. Lee, this is one of the big challenges that many associate nations have, is how they introduce cricket and promote it. That's easier said than done, especially in an associate nation that cricket is not too familiar, or people are not too familiar with the sport, which is not the case in Jersey, because obviously the game's been there for a very long time, so people are accustomed to cricket, but in other parts of the associate world, not so much. So obviously, you as an organization, and even you in your current post as a cricket operations head of that, must be scratching your head every time you sit back in your chair and you ask yourself these questions: how do we introduce cricket into the community? How do we establish grassroots cricket, local cricket clubs in communities, competitions, pathway systems, underage comps to get the talent identification there up until the international level? How do we sort that out? Having facilities, that's often a big one, isn't it, in associate cricket? Access to nets, grounds, turf pitches. Often they're often synthetic in some parts of the associate world. And making them available for people to access in their local areas. I think in full member countries like Australia, for example, where I'm from, sort of take that for granted, where you can walk down to your local park and there's a net and a cricket ground, whereas in other parts of the associate world, you don't have that. So you have to make do with football grounds and other grounds that are not really meant for cricket, but you just have to make do what you have. And trying to get cricket into schools and their programs, and trying to encourage kids to take up the sport from a young age and start them off on their development of the game and becoming potentially cricketers for any associate country or full member nation. So, Lee, what challenges does Jersey cricket have in trying to grow and develop cricket in the Jersey community? And do you see cricket becoming a mainstream sport in Jersey? Your thoughts on those?
Yeah, well, I mean, as I've said before, I think the population that we have is a limiting factor. There's only a certain number of young players on the island at any one time, whether that's, across all sports or whether that's just for cricket. We have tend to find over a long period of time that the most promising young cricketers tend to be the most promising young footballers, hockey players, rugby players. On the girls' side of things, the best netballers, so we're competing, and we're constantly competing with other sports to try and get the child's attention, to try and get them committed. It's a challenge, and it is the same across all sports. And obviously, every sport wants to get the most out of their best young cricketers or their young sports players. So it's about, taking a collaborative approach as much as possible, allowing young cricketers to be multi-sport athletes up to a certain age is a really important thing. We're very much a big advocate of that. We don't want to be pushing people into cricket too early and just basically making them focus on one sport. There's maybe a time and a place for that. If you want to take a step to the next level, that's for sure it's needed at a certain age, different ages for different people. But certainly it's, there's off seasons, there's on seasons, so commitments and times and things like that we're fairly flexible with, and we want our young players to be playing lots of sports. The other challenges we face don't tend to be too big a challenge. It's about just quickly finding the answers to those challenges. That we've got a very successful development program in Jersey, as I've said over and over again. When you know that your focus is to produce your own, you have to develop a big grassroots level of players. We have a very successful primary schools program and have done for since I've been involved, so 10 years plus, where there's around 30 primary schools on the island, which gives us a lot of access to young players we can get in during curriculum time to lead PE lessons and deliver high quality cricket sessions that get youngsters engaged in the game from a very early age. Our program starts with reception classes and year one classes where we do fundamental skills like balance, striking, coordination. So that has a massive impact. And we have a brilliant development team. Dom, who I mentioned earlier, who's our under-19s coach until very recently, has been very, very much a big part of that. Before that, I was a big part of that. So it's sort of like passing on to the next generation type thing at the moment. And we've got Grace where they're all currently working for us, who's one of the women's players, who she's going into schools and delivering sessions, not just as a female role model, but also as just a kickstarter of the game. She's had a very successful start to doing that, and we gain access to as many schools that will have us. So we say to them, you know, this is what we've got available. You let us know when you want to come in. So we do as much work as we can at the grassroots level, at school level. On from that, we have successful community courses that we brand as Future Reds. So that starts a lot of young players out in their cricket careers. A lot of players, who you would see on the team sheet these days had actually started on that program. Acer himself was one of them, Jonty before him, Harrison Carlyon before him. You know, the list goes on and on as to these young lads who started playing cricket at age 8, 9 at our community courses, just playing diamond cricket and modified cricket and learning the hardball game through that. Only very recently have we established junior club cricket in Jersey, which may come as a surprise to a lot of listeners. When I was growing up, it was schools cricket and then Jersey cricket, and that was it. The club was a thing that you played at senior level and you never played any junior cricket. It was all school and then immediately into Jersey. So that was something that's changed the landscape of cricket in Jersey quite quickly at junior level over the last. We started looking at that in 2017. We started out with four teams and 47 players. We've now got over 18 junior teams with nearly 300 young cricketers playing across that pathway. So the clubs themselves have been really responsive to that, and the volunteer work and the time spent and the resource spent working with them has been phenomenal, and we thank them for their hard work, because we put the framework in place and they ultimately go out and deliver it and get people interested in the game and develop them at club level, which has been a huge success for us. So that's now about maintaining that and continuing to grow numbers where we can. And then that leads nicely within, you know, the talent identifications type focus from club cricket into Jersey junior cricket. And that's the same across both pathways. With the girls side of things, we're a bit more in-house at the moment. There's no girls club sides as such, but we do get them into the Women's Premier League, where there's four teams that we put on in-house as such with different names. And the junior Lionesses squads, the pathway at the moment looks like 2 under-11s groups of up to 40 plus players, 2 under-13s groups of around 30, an under-15s and an under-17s. So we're establishing something that we're building there, and they play competitively against the boys club sides in weekend fixtures. So they get lots of cricket, plus, you know, early entry into the Women's Premier League, where they're playing against some of our women's national stars. So not only do they get to get coached by them and work alongside them, they get to play against them or with them. So it's a massive strength of what we do, where we're very inclusive of our best players and our national players giving back, as we first talked about, giving back to the game. They do that through, you know, mentorship, coaching, whatever they can, really. And having access to that type of player that, you know, from the men's side of things, they might have watched on Sky Sports at the age of 10 to now being coached by them or playing alongside them, it's pretty inspiring. So it builds that off the field, you know, sort of rapport that the players have with our junior players. And then from the development side of things, you can see how that naturally progresses as we go. We're not doing anything that is ripping up the textbook and doing something completely new that's successful. It's about building something that is successful and then pouring all your resource you can into making it as successful as possible and maintaining it over a long period of time. So that has various challenges along the way. But with every challenge, you know, comes an opportunity that means we can improve it and build on something different. So we're extremely excited about where our pathway's taken us so far. And we continue to do that. And that's a very big part of what we've got planned moving forward and in the future. I don't see anything changing drastically anytime soon. I don't think all of a sudden Jersey passports are going to be a thing. So I don't think that's going to change anything anytime soon. And as I say, the focus remains solely on producing our own. And that's what we'll strive to do day in, day out.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. And it's very encouraging to hear you say those things about the growth and development and the programs that you've put in place and the pathways and all that stuff have been very successful. So if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Just try to improve it, which the team has done. So that's fantastic to hear. And it's very encouraging to hear that there's good growth and development in Jersey in terms of younger kids, boys and girls, getting into the game and wanting to learn more and wanting to play more. And that's fantastic to hear. In terms of the ICC, in terms of them helping associate nations out, in terms of your relationship with them, how would you best describe your relationship with the ICC in terms of them, in terms of their support and guidance over these years? How would you best describe your relationship with the ICC?
Yeah, so I guess it's two different things here, where we've got the relationship with ICC Europe and then ICC head office. Our relationship within ICC Europe is very strong. They're very open to communication. We chat with them regularly. They check in with us regularly. They see and appreciate what we do. We've got a good relationship with Andy Wright and his team at ICC Europe. They understand that we're a strong cricketing nation who fly the flag for Europe at many events around the world and have done for a number of years now. They recognize the development work that we do. They're very appreciative of that, and we're very appreciative of the efforts that they put in to support us as much as they can. Europe's a big place. There's lots of countries playing. I think the growth across Europe has been extremely encouraging, with the, you know, now 9 on 30 teams standing in line for 2 qualification spots out of Europe, which includes Ireland and Scotland. So, you know, we're part of either Division A, B or C in the sub-regional qualifiers, of which there's 8 to 10 teams in each of those. And then ultimately, you know, it comes together in the ICC Europe finals, of which 2 places to go to a full World Cup are on offer. So that's grown hugely as cricket across Europe has grown, and the standard of cricket across those sub-regionals is only going to continue to improve with players coming into Europe for various reasons, and you know, cricketing nations putting in a large amount of resources into their development schemes and the way that they put efforts into their cricket across their larger nations than what we are with the landscape that they've got. So yeah, our relationship with ICC Europe is fantastic. It's mutual respect from both sides, and we're regularly in communication with them about what's going on across the board. With ICC head office, it's a little bit more arm's length. As an associate nation, we have an ICC associate representative that sort of represents everybody, which is a large number of nations compared to the full members. So that's a bit more of an arm's length organization type approach. But we don't get too involved in sort of worrying too much about that. We're involved in the Challenge League process, which we're very grateful to be a part of and have earned our way into it, which is 15 games over 3 years across 3 different tournaments. And the relationship we've had with them has always been strong. We're very proud of the facilities we have in Jersey, where we've hosted many events since we've become an ICC member. I'd like to believe that ICC head office, as well as ICC Europe, which we know about, ICC Europe are very laud our facilities and see the strong you know, relationship we have there with hosting tournaments up at Farmers, here at Grainville, at FB and various places across the island. And they like to be able to get involved in giving us tournaments and us hosting, and we like hosting. And people like coming here, so it's a good relationship, and long may it last. Because the wickets we have here, the grass wickets, the effort that the ground staff put in across all different facilities, even, you know, for local cricket, Premier League, Division 1 and 2 level, the facilities we have here are superb, and we're very grateful for all the people who work within each organisation that means we're able to put on, you know, a high level of cricket, whether that be international or club.
Yeah, definitely, absolutely. I couldn't agree more with what you said there, Lee. In terms of the ICC, in any improvements that you could make, in from your perspective, what do you think the ICC can do better when it comes to helping associate nations out in terms of the growth and development side? Because many countries start with nothing and, you know, can't really do it on their own, so they need that support. But what can the ICC do better than they have been doing at the moment, in your view?
Yeah, I mean, from my point of view, I think it's the easy answer is money. Is more money would be nice. I think that's obviously what everybody sitting around the table wants and what people would say. I'd certainly say, you know, from a little bit more constructive point of view, the recent changes to provide coach education has been really useful. Previously, we've had to go to ECB for that, whereas now the resources are all in-house within ICC and it's a lot more accessible for us and easier to administer. So from that point of view and the growth of volunteers and coaches, it's become a big strength. Having made everybody T20i status and putting ranking points on series and the growth model that they've got within the T20 game and the 20 team World Cup is all really positive and can only inspire us to try and work harder to gain access into that top level, which we're all motivated to do. But, you know, I think really the support that we get and the continued growth at 50 over cricket would be great as well. I think, you know, it would be wrong to not mention the level of participation at the 50 over World Cup compared to other sports. It's obviously a big debate amongst cricket, and a lot of nations who aren't in want to be in, and all they want is an opportunity. And we would say the same, that more opportunity to play at a higher level against the best nations in the world and test yourself against the best would be what we would desire more than anything from ICC. So, yeah, I think if we could see a growth in that as well as the T20, that would be superb. We're proud of our efforts within 50 over cricket. We were close to ODI status and we want to continue to push that. So any way that ICC can continue to do that and grow that would be seen as a success in our eyes.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Definitely more teams in the 50 over World Cup, which they are going to do for the next World Cup in South Africa, Namibia and Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
They're going to move that number up from 10 to 14, I think. So sort of like it was back in 2007 in the West Indies in that World Cup, which you had the likes of Bermuda and all those other teams participating in that World Cup. So definitely could only benefit the game tremendously if that happens, but we'll have to wait and see what the ICC decide on that. In terms of the Olympics, because cricket's now been in the Olympics now, Lee, will that make any difference for your side of things in Jersey in terms of people seeing it on the Olympics, or will that make any impact at all in terms of cricket being in the Olympics and the funding that you will get as an Olympic sport? Will that make a difference in Jersey?
There's absolutely no doubt it will make a difference. I think the visibility of the game is going to be the immediate impact. With regards to funding and things like that, there's a lot of questions that would need answering regarding that. But to include it as an Olympic sport only gets more eyes watching the sport, and gives another platform for people to watch it and maybe get into it. There's no doubt we've seen the impact that the hundreds had on the women's game in particular. That's evident here in Jersey with the way that the young girls are talking, or you know what the kids are wearing, shirts to sessions and things like that. So if you apply that on an international scale to the Olympics, which is the big sporting occasion in world calendar, it can only have a massive impact on hopefully participation, the visibility of players, and where that then leads for Jersey and the bigger picture of things, whether that's a realistic ambition of ours is to get to an Olympics as an Olympic sport, I don't know. The recent inclusion in the Commonwealth Games was something that we looked at, that's for sure. With the inclusion based on rankings within the qualifying tournament, the Commonwealth Games took out a few nations that were above us, which gave us maybe an opportunity. I think funding was a massive issue there, of how that would all fit within our funding model was the biggest question that needed answering. But I think any time cricket is accessed in a new way, or it's put on TV in a new way, it's only going to have a positive impact. So it'll be really interesting to see where that can go, how that fits, how many teams are involved, who's involved. I think we'll probably keep a close eye on it and monitor how that all works within what we already do, and whether there's an opportunity there for Jersey to participate or not. We will try and piggyback off it and grow cricket within our own country, just like we do at the moment with World Cups and other tournaments.
Yeah, that's right. Any Has there been any approaches to Jersey cricket about funding for the Olympics from the various Olympic bodies in terms of
nothing?
Well, it will be the UK in your case, will it?
Yeah, I'm not too sure. There's a fair few things in there that I wouldn't be able to unpack immediately off the top of my head. I'm not aware of any approaches made. The only thing I've seen is that it is going to be included and that it's been voted to be inclusive. And that's a great thing. So when the right time comes, we'll look at that, whether that's already been looked at from the powers that be above me. Maybe it has, but certainly nothing our end that I've seen that would suggest that we've been approached for anything. But yeah, exciting times.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. And it'll be interesting to see how it goes in LA in 2028 and then in Brisbane in 2032 after that. Definitely cricket will be in Brisbane for those Olympics.
Yeah. Sure.
Obviously, but there's been some drama with the Olympics and all that in Brisbane at the moment in terms of, you know, trying to get venues ready and all that stuff. That's been a big talking point in the news.
Yeah.
So let's see what happens. It's a long way off. Yeah, it's only 2024. Time flies.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah, that's right. Just going back on the growth and development, Lee, in terms of that in Jersey, in terms of the future of that, are you very optimistic that, you know, what you're doing at the moment will continue to be on that upward trajectory as the years go by in terms of that growth and development, the work that you've done will keep going up and up in Europe?
Yeah.
In
Europe? Yeah. I mean, as I say, we're always limited with the player pool that we have on Ireland. So we're realistic in our growth expectations. But I think, you know, we take the view of, as with most things we do, if the growth continues, fantastic. If it stagnates a bit, then fine. Let's try and, you know, look at ways that we can make it better. One thing that we've already done within that junior club system is we originally started focused just based on age, and we'd have under 11s and under 13s, and then they'd move into men's cricket. Whereas, you know, once the growth wasn't as big as it was before, we were then focused on making the environment the best possible for the players involved. So we now have a tiered system where rather than just an age being the main determining factor of which cricket you play, it's now based on what's best for your development as a cricketer. So if you're a very strong under 11 cricketer, you can access a higher tier of cricket. And if you're a very new beginner under 11, you can start where it's most applicable to you to learn the game a bit more and focus on understanding the hardball game. And the same with the under 13s as they get older. We don't want it to be, you know, just whatever time you jump into cricket, you're expected to be a certain level and you're expected to play amongst your peers regardless. It's always got to be about the individual and the environment that they find themselves in. And if they have a very negative experience within an environment within cricket in their early years, there's a good chance they won't come back to the game. So it's our responsibility, along with the clubs, to provide the correct environment for that individual player. That includes the girls as well, as to playing with themselves against the boys, and sort of being comfortable in doing that. And you know, our focus in the short term with them is to provide more games that are all female participants, where they get to play against each other and not just have to turn up against the boys every weekend. So that's in the offing, and we're looking to do that and give them more opportunities against each other. The number of cricketers is there that needs to be. So a junior Premier League, an under 15s league, under 13s league is extremely possible with what we're doing with girls and women's cricket. So that's exciting for them, and we know that's something that they want. But in the short term, we're continuing to try and build the environments around the players that is most applicable to the either the standard or the experience that they've got. Not everybody's wanting to be a Jersey cricketer. We understand that. A lot of cricketers, as we've mentioned before, their motivation is to turn up and enjoy it with their mates on a Saturday or Sunday, whenever that may be, go home, not take it too seriously, and train maybe once a week and hit some balls and bowl some balls, and that's it. So if that's what you want to do, superb. We're not in the job just to produce future stars or the best cricketers we can. We want to provide cricket for all, and we want everybody to feel comfortable within the environment that they're in. So within growth and development, the growth is one thing, but the development is another side of things, and numbers aren't everything. So trying to ensure that we keep those numbers and retain those numbers is just as important. And yeah, we're comfortable with the way that we're doing that, and we need to continue to review and improve year on year and keep providing these clubs with the resources that they need to do that on our behalf and for their growth of their club at senior level, and get back to the days where we had lots of club teams on Ireland all competing against each other at the senior level. And, you know, ultimate goal, having them with junior girls' sides and women's sides that we see in the UK growing exponentially. So, yeah, there's a lot of work to do, but a lot of good work to do, and work that we know is needed and very doable.
Definitely, absolutely. It's very encouraging from what you've told us today, Lee, about the growth and development. It's very encouraging. It looks promising, optimistic, which is fantastic. Good to see a lot of people interested in the sport. I think that's the main thing. You must be doing something right if they're interested. So, yeah, that's right. So that's good to hear, and it's good to hear that all the hard work that you've put in and others have made a difference and promoting the sport of cricket in Jersey, which is fantastic to hear. So thank you for sharing that with us, Lee, about the growth and development of cricket in Jersey. Very promising, and the signs look pretty good, which is fantastic to hear. Lee, we've finally reached our last topic of this long discussion. It feels like we've been batting in a test match for 6 hours or something during one day's play. It's the last session of the day. And there's one more over left until stumps, and then we can go and have a rest.
Hopefully I won't do a Kasparovic and glove one down the leg side.
Yes, I'll do that, yes. but I've enjoyed our chat immensely, Lee, and learned so much. So just one more thing to talk about before we end today. And I thought we talk about what the future holds for cricket in Jersey. It's very hard to predict the future, as we know. It can be very uncertain, the future. You don't know what's going to happen. But, Lee, how do you see Jersey cricket and associate cricket going into the future? Your thoughts looking into the crystal ball, your predictions going into the future?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I think it's exciting, as I've mentioned. I think from the women's point of view, that's got so much potential. Having been involved in it firsthand, I can't speak enough for how much effort and time the girls have put into their cricket. They're motivators. They are, you know, they've got chips on their shoulder to come out and show people just how good they can be. You know, they've got big support behind them, both administratively and from a coaching staff point of view. The talents are off the scale in terms of what they could do with the right resources put in front of them. They need access to cricket, and lots of it. And that's what we're trying to do. They need to play lots of cricket and learn the game, but the skills and the talent that they've got is superb to see. So that is something that is going to be a seriously big growth area for us. I would certainly be saying watch this space in regards to future cricketers representing, you know, counties and 100 teams. I think individual cricketers across our women's program have got the opportunity to go and really express themselves in the UK. That's untapped for us. We don't know what the potential is there. We've got girls going to school in the UK. We've got girls who have been amongst Southern Vipers, as I say, with Chloe and Sunrisers. There's so much talent on Ireland, and it's untapped within the girls and women's game, including the growth. And it'll be, I think, what's most exciting there is to see what we can produce with a proper pathway. I think we're still just in the very early years of producing a performance pathway that offers exactly what each young aspiring girls cricketer wants to be. So once that is fully established, and it'll be interesting to see the first product come out of that and see what we can produce. The growth of the game there is obviously a bigger picture as well, with lots of teams playing on Ireland and enjoying their cricket. Within the men's game, I think ODI status is a realistic prospect to go up from this Challenge League series back to that playoff level that we reached in Namibia last time. I don't see us losing too many players from that squad. They're young and they're hungry, and they're well led by a very experienced skipper, and the younger players who I coach when they were younger are now senior players as they're getting older, with huge amounts of tournament experience. So I think the landscape has changed quite quickly within men's cricket. What used to be potentially T20 World Cups, getting over the line against Scotland and Ireland is going to be tougher than ever. But the 50 over cycle to get ODI status for a 3-year period would be extremely achievable, and one that I think that's going to be our biggest growth in the men's side of things. And then, you know, bigger picture within the men's and boys side of things at the moment, just to continue to sort of feed that senior cricket in Jersey, try and get as many young cricketers into the men's game, playing Division 2, Division 1, and ultimately Premier League cricket. We've got four teams at the moment. We hope that continues for a long time. We hope to grow that at the Premier League level. We've got a young, hungry club that are producing a lot of junior cricketers that have the desire to be a Premier League cricket side in the future. So it's just about us ensuring that we continue to provide resources for that, to allow them to do that. So yeah, in short, a very successful, hopefully, future with new coaches coming in on both sides of the pathway to take that forward. A young CEO in terms of experience of Sarah Gomesall, our first female CEO, which is fantastic for the sport and for our young girls as a role model. She's only been in the job a year and learned a lot already, and her vision, I know, is strong, and she's got a clear idea of where she wants to take us moving forward, which can only be a positive thing. So it's very exciting to be in my role, to work for Jersey Cricket, and to see what happens on the field for the players that take the field for Jersey, and ultimately the club cricketers who play recreationally at the weekend.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely the future is bright. And thank you, Lee, for sharing your predictions into the crystal ball and seeing what's going to happen in the years to come for Jersey Cricket. Let's hope all those predictions come true, and let's hope success for Jersey Cricket going into the years to come, because all the good work and the hard work you put in behind the scenes, I should say, with the team and yourself in your role, is paying dividends, and hopefully that can continue going into the years to come, and hopefully we see some good results from both the women and the men's sides. Definitely.
That's great.
Thank you for sharing that with us there, Lee. Lee, thank you for joining me today for this Associate Cricket Series episode to discuss all things Jersey Cricket. I've enjoyed it immensely, Lee. I've learned so much, and I'm sure everyone listening to our conversation today have learned loads about cricket in Jersey, and would like to see how both the women's and men's teams go about their business, or may go for a holiday to Jersey maybe and check out the island itself, because it's
beautiful. Island.
Yes, it's quite beautiful. And wanting to do some travel if they want to, maybe go and watch a game of cricket as well.
Yeah, we're always happy to welcome visitors and also cricket teams who want to come here and play cricket. If there's anyone out there listening who's interested, feel free to get in touch and bring a team here. We've got fantastic facilities, as I said, and whether you're, you know, a high performance side or a recreational club side, we're delighted to have people come and visit our island, whether playing cricket or just as visitors to watch cricket. So yeah, we're always excited for that. So if anybody's listening to this and wants to get involved, just drop us an email and get in touch online on our website or wherever, and yeah, we'd be happy to accommodate that.
Definitely, absolutely. That's not a bad offer. That's not a bad offer that Lee has just thrown out there. Yeah, why not? You know, you won't regret it, that's for sure. Lee, if people want to get in touch with you or Jersey Cricket, where can they do that if they want to make some inquiries?
Yeah, so our website, www.jerseycricket.je, is the initial contact. There's a contact us part of that page where you can get involved by putting in what you need, and someone would get back to you in the short term. We're online. We've got our social media channels on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. So if you're on there and you want to give us a follow or a like or whatever it might be these days, feel free to. We try and respond to as many messages as we can. We get a lot of messages about people wanting to come and play for us. There's obviously a big barrier in place there with visas and passport holders, etc. So we're not necessarily able to accommodate that, but if you've got an interest in coming to Jersey or coaching, playing, whatever, yeah, feel free to get in touch and we'll get back to you as soon as we can.
Definitely. We'll leave links to those in the description of this episode for people to check out. And if they want to do some more research into cricket in Jersey, we'll definitely leave those links in the description of this episode. Before we go, remember to like, share, comment, subscribe, and click the bell to make sure you get the latest episodes of the podcast. Be sure to like and share our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter and on Instagram. Also, the podcast is available on Anchor, Spotify, and on Apple Podcasts. Once again, thank you, Lee, for joining me today to discuss all things Jersey cricket. I hope all of you watching or listening to this Associate Cricket Series episode learned a lot about cricket in Jersey from Lee. Until next time, keep safe and bye for now.